Hi, welcome to today's episode of Evolve This, where today we explore pressing issues in healthcare through the lens of ethics, equity, and actionable change. I'm Aaliyah, and today we're diving into how social justice theory intersects with healthcare policy and practice. Specifically, we'll discuss the systemic inequities perpetuated by insurance companies and the critical role social justice can play in reshaping our approach to patient care. This episode is inspired by personal experiences, my own academic insights, and shared frustration with the systems that prioritize profit over people. Our journey begins with a concept central to nursing and healthcare: emancipatory knowledge. If you haven't heard of the different ways of knowing in healthcare, let me break it down for you. There are so many ways we as healthcare professionals are taught to know things. For example, there's personal knowledge. It comes with experience, combines intuition with empathy, and is about learning through practice, not just education. But my favorite of all is emancipatory knowledge. This one is the game changer, the spark. It challenges us to think critically and question the status quo. Emancipatory knowledge asks us to look around and say, why does this exist? Could it be done differently or better? It's like micromanaging life, but in a way that actually helps people. So why does this matter? Why am I bringing it up now? It hit home for me recently, and it's something I hope to advocate for more in the future. Don't we all want the best for the people we care for? Even if we don't express it every day, there are parts of us that genuinely want the best for the people we encounter. I work in the cath lab. If you're unfamiliar with that, it's a surgical unit primarily focused on vascular procedures. Of course, we do other things too, like pacemaker insertions, EP studies. But vascular intervention is our bread and butter. Myocardial infarction? We're your people. In my workplace, we operate outside of a hospital. And in this setting, I see firsthand how systemic barriers, like those imposed by insurance companies, directly affect patient care. Imagine with me for a second. Let's imagine your dearest loved one. Maybe it's your mom or dad, someone you love deeply. Now imagine them older, unable to advocate for themselves and dealing with multiple chronic conditions like diabetes or coronary artery disease. Imagine your dearest loved one is scheduled for a procedure, like a peripheral angiogram. That's a test to observe and fix arteries in the legs. You read through the list of risks, and among them are hemorrhage, stroke, and death. Your loved one has multiple chronic conditions and is elderly, has long-standing leg pain, and without this procedure, they may face the possibility of amputation, a life of ischemic limb pain, that is, just a constant aching pain in the legs or feet caused by poor blood flow. With this disease process, the muscles are deprived of oxygen, making even simple activities like walking or resting painful. In the worst cases, the lack of blood flow can lead to non-healing ulcers, open wounds that struggle to close and remain at constant risk of infection. It's a cycle that can become life-threatening. Sounds awful, right? Now imagine that your loved one's insurance company has mandated a diagnostic procedure to be performed first, which means only taking pictures without being able to fix anything. Even if there is proof by non-invasive measures that point to the anticipation of intervention. But despite these observations, the patient must undergo an arterial puncture, expose their kidneys to potentially harmful dye, and accept the risks of conscious sedation. all to take pictures so the insurance company can decide whether or not they will pay for intervention. Now let's talk about what intervention actually involves. While it may sound complex, the function is quite simple. We use tools similar to a Roto-Rooter for pipes to clear blockages. And then, in addition, we often use balloons and stents to restore blood flow. These procedures can significantly improve a patient's quality of life, especially if they happen in a timely manner. Let's break this down further. There are two major issues with insurance-mandated diagnostic procedures. First, if the diagnostic procedure weren't required, we could fix the issue in one step, one procedure, one arterial stick, and less risk. Second, even when approval is granted, insurance companies often dictate what treatments can and cannot be performed. For example, some policies only cover stenting and atherectomy together. Atherectomy, as we described previously as a Roto-Rooter for the arteries, clears blockages, while stenting involves placing a scaffold to keep the artery open. Both improve blood flow. But here's the thing. Stenting isn't always necessary. Introducing a foreign body comes with lifelong implications, like the need for blood thinners and issues such as in-stent restenosis. On the flip side, some insurance companies refuse to pay for stenting initially or only approve fixing specific vessels. What I know to be true is that insurance companies try to dictate what happens. They create unnecessary obstacles, forcing providers to jump through hoops just to give patients the care that they need. And this is where social justice theory becomes critical. It asks us to recognize these inequities and advocate for change so that healthcare is driven by patient needs, not by corporate profit margins. So how does social justice theory apply here? At its core, social justice is about fairness, ensuring everyone has equitable access to resources and opportunities, especially the most vulnerable. In healthcare, this means breaking down systemic barriers and advocating for policies that put patients first. Social justice theory also reminds us of the ripple effect of these policies. When inequities persist, vulnerable populations experience worse health outcomes. This is where we, as healthcare providers, have a unique responsibility to act. Document cases, share stories, and collaborate with organizations to push for systemic change. Together, we can challenge harmful systems. But this brings me to a big question. Where does all this frustration go? When we see systems that are blatantly unfair, it builds up. Without power or a plan to change things, it feels overwhelming. And sometimes, this frustration boils over in ways that are unsettling. This reminds me of a recurring theme in Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, where systemic oppression and personal desperation push characters into morally catastrophic actions. The protagonist, Raskolnikov, commits murder, believing he's justified in eliminating a harmful individual, only to spiral into guilt and inner turmoil. It's a haunting exploration of how systemic issues breed personal despair, which in turn fuels destructive acts. What makes Dostoevsky's character, Raskolnikov, so compelling and so relevant today is his brilliance and how his intellectual reasoning intersects with the harsh realities of systemic inequities. Dostoevsky beautifully captures how even the most rational and well-intentioned individuals can fall victim to flawed logic and moral compromise when faced with insurmountable pressure. If you haven't read Crime and Punishment, that's okay. These same ideas resonate in other more modern ways. For example, think of the show Dexter. You know, that serial killer who justifies killing the bad guys? It's messy business. But it's a similar moral dilemma. Dexter's brilliance and his justification for his actions draw us in and make us question our own perceptions of morality. Like Raskolnikov, Dexter embodies the conflict between intellect and emotion, between logic and humanity. Both characters reflect how systemic failures and personal desperation can lead to choices that blur the line between justice and transgression. Doesn't that sound eerily familiar? In our modern political and social climate, we see echoes of this duality everywhere. People pushed to the brink by systemic failures resort to drastic measures. While their actions might be unjustifiable, even justifiable, they often stem from the same frustration and despair that Dostoevsky explored. Now, amidst all this frustration, I want to share a theory that has been growing in my heart and relentlessly pursuing my mind. It's a theory of love. Now, don't get backgammon by the typical definition of love, because my conceptualization goes a bit deeper. Teilhard de Chardin once said, "Someday, after mastering the winds, the waves, the tides, and gravity, we shall harness for God all the energies of love, and then, for the second time in the history of the world, man will have discovered fire." Isn't that beautiful? Teilhard de Chardin, was a French Jesuit priest, philosopher, and paleontologist who sought to reconcile science and spirituality. He believed evolution was not just a physical process, but a spiritual one, driven by love as the ultimate unifying force. I'm currently reading his book, The Phenomenon of Man, and while it may border on the philosophical and metaphysical, he's onto something. That something feels like the cohesive energy that binds us all together. It's a concept I'd love to empirically measure someday, but for now, I find comfort in knowing that love, this invisible force, drives us to benevolence and allows us to make things right again. It's what allows us to look at broken systems and say, we can make this right again. In my mind, love is an invisible evolutionary path, a force that propels humanity forward, even when it seems like chaos prevails. If you look at history, good always prevails, doesn't it? Maybe not immediately, but eventually. Why? Because love, this intrinsic connective force, compels us to rise above despair and work towards justice. In the context of social justice and healthcare, this theory of love reminds us to center our advocacy on compassion and the shared humanity we all possess. When we focus on love, we're better equipped to address the inequities and systemic failures that harm the most vulnerable. Love gives us the courage to demand better, to be better, and to never stop fighting for a world that reflects the best of who we are. Now, social justice isn't just a theory that comes up now. It's lived within us all along. Remember the Industrial Revolution? Remember all the people driven to cities, looking for work? The living conditions were poor. Children were working in deplorable conditions. Rats lived in the streets with pigs. Don't believe me? Look up some of Jacob Riis's photographs, like in How the Other Half Lives. That is one of his most powerful books that documents urban poverty through photos and beautiful words. And then there's this woman named Jane Addams, a social reformer in Chicago in 1889, who co-founded this lovely little place called the Hull House. It provided so much to so many in need, like education for children and even healthcare. She was a pioneer in her day. She once said, "The good we secure for ourselves is precarious and uncertain until it is secured for all of us and incorporated into our common life." The greater good is a deep aspect we should all consider, especially in today's political climate and the seemingly disunified experience of American culture. I think we all know what I'm talking about, whether you're red or blue. Was it Mr. Rogers who said, "When you see all the bad, all the chaos, remind yourself to also look for the people who are helping, because there's always someone who is." Don't quote me on that, but Mr. Rogers was a badass, really. My point is, we need more Jane Addams, more Jacob Rees's, more Mr. Rogers. I go to work, and sometimes I feel like evil is prevailing. But then I remember, I see the good people, people like us, just trying to make a difference. It all prevails in the end. So what can we do? First, educate yourself. Understand the policies affecting your workplace and patients. Second, share stories. Patient stories are powerful tools for highlighting systemic harm. Third, advocate for reform, whether it's through professional organizations, legislative efforts, or a podcast like this. Thank you so much for joining me today. If this episode resonated with you, please share it with your colleagues, friends, or anyone else who might benefit. Together, we can amplify the call for justice in healthcare. I'd love to hear about your call to advocating or things that just haven't sat right with you in our healthcare system. Until then, this is Aaliyah signing out from the Evolve This podcast. Take care of yourselves and each other.